Good afternoon. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is May the 9th, 2022, and this is one more in my ongoing series of podcasts where I am talking with candidates in the June, or rather for the June 2nd, 2022 Ontario election. And I am pleased to have as my guest this afternoon, Mario Greco, who is running in the Vaughan Woodbridge riding. And we'll let him tell you a bit about himself and what he's up to. So welcome, Mario. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, looking forward to this. So I looked at your information page a little bit, and I see that actually it goes to the federal election last fall. So you were running for the People's Party in the fall.
Yeah.
And why don't we start there? Be interested in why running at all, why the People's Party of Canada, and what you learned from all that. So maybe we can begin with a bit of introduction of who you are and what you do and what brings you here today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a high school computer science and business teacher normally. I studied game development and entrepreneurship in my undergraduate studies. And then I really enjoyed teaching people and helping them learn. I believe that everyone has the potential to become the best version of themselves. And I hope to foster that just as I wish that, like some teachers have done for me, other teachers not so much, and I want to be that teacher I wish I had. So I pursued that. I found that with teaching, because I would work as an LTO, which stands for long-term occasional. What that means is I work by contract at different schools. One school I'm at there for like a semester, another school I'm at for a year, and I kind of bounce around a bit. And it was a lot of work because a lot of the time I had to make my resources from scratch. Sometimes I get help from other teachers. But I would kind of like refine it and place it in a way that works for me because I tend to mark more on an objective level as opposed to more subjective. So anyway, making the resources, making the lessons, making the assignments, making answer keys and stuff like that, helping the students, you know, like it's a joy to be able to do this, but it's also a lot of work and it resulted in a lot of burnout. So there was at one point, I just got to a point where I'm like, you know what? Let me do something different because as much as I love teaching, let me pursue something that I have a great interest and enjoyment in. And I decided to run for the People's Party afterward.
Hey, Mario, before we get into the People's Party, you said some really, really interesting things here just about yourself and all that. You know, you use the phrase, you know, you wanted to be sort of the teacher that you never had. I think that's what you said. That's really interesting because obviously you think that teachers make a difference.
Yeah, they do. I had some great teachers. It's just, I'd also remember some times where I had some teachers that weren't as encouraging and sometimes, had more of a negative impact on me, unfortunately, as it happens. Like no teacher is perfect. I'm not going to hold it against them, but you know, there's some pedagogical things that some teachers have done that I vehemently disagree with in hindsight. Like, for example, there was a teacher I had that would announce which students in the class got perfect. And I felt that was very, it really fostered a fixed mindset rather than a growth mindset because it kind of like separated the smart from the not as smart. And, especially with kids, like sometimes you don't feel as you're developing, you might feel insecure about yourself and your development and your social status and stuff. Right. So I was kind of at the bottom of the barrel in regards to that social hierarchy. And I tried to prove myself saying, yeah, I can get perfect. But then I fell short by like half a mark and she didn't like consider that. And basically it's like, oh yeah, you didn't get perfect. And I didn't get that class acknowledgement. Like, yeah, Mario's actually like good at something. Mario's actually relevant at something. Cause I wasn't that, you know, popular. But there's some pedagogical things like that that I disagree with among many others, but I use that under my belt now to try and help students better. And I'm not saying that literally every student likes me. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I'm always looking to improve and looking to help the students, especially those that are struggling, especially those that need that support. you know, because I find that there's some students who like are naturally good, they're naturally gifted, they do well and stuff like that, you know, and I'm happy to have them in my class. And you know, it's a joy to teach them, just like it's a joy to teach everyone else. But I really have a feeling for those that struggle, because I struggled a lot myself when I was a student. And that's one of the motivating reasons why I went to teaching, is because there's always this phrase like, there's some people who just can't do something. And I'm like, I don't agree with that. I believe that if someone really puts their mind to something, they can achieve it no matter what, right? And they just need that encouragement. And I hope to be that encouragement. You know what I mean?
I think that's really, really interesting. I mean, I agree with you that I think that teachers just make a phenomenal, they have a phenomenal impact in people's lives, you know, whether positive or negative. I mean, there's no question about that. So I take it that you weren't always the greatest student growing up.
Absolutely not. No, I was.
Thank God for that. Full disclosure, neither was I.
No. Elementary school, I was quite the hellraiser. But high school, became a good boy after, because I wanted to do well. And then, university was, it continued on. I wanted to find a career in game dev, but then I found more fulfillment in teaching people, and teaching others how to play games. Sorry, teaching others how to make games. Sorry, not play games. We already know how to play games. Want to teach them how to make games.
Taking it to the next level. So what changed when you got to high school? How come you decided you wanted to do well all of a sudden?
Because, well, the thing is, I've always wanted to do well. Ever since I was a kid, I've always wanted to do well. It's just I always fell short. And I just always felt like fatigued every time I make an effort and I wouldn't, reach the next level. And, I often had conflict with other students, other classmates, I guess other teachers too, sometimes administration. My conflict resolution skills weren't the greatest, you know. And I think a lot of it had to do with I guess I'll disclose the fact that like I was born with Asperger's syndrome, which is a type of autism. So that
started Bobby Fischer, the world's greatest chess player. So did, was it Bach or Mozart? One of those musicians.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are good things. I mean, negative, or you can say, wow, look at the elite group of people I'm with.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, that's exactly why I believe that everyone has potential, because whether someone has this condition, that condition, like everyone's different. Everyone's unique. We're all not like, we all have imperfections, right? Whether I have Asperger's, someone else has something else. Someone else might have something that's not even medically documented, but in the end, we're all different and we all have the potential to do well and become better people. Right. So at the same time, like back when I was a student, I, wasn't the easiest to teach, but now I kind of use that under my belt to empathize with the students who maybe are walking the same path that I did. And I want to be there for them and say, hey, you know what? I believe in you, man. I you know, you got this. It's a privilege to really be able to, be there for students. You know, it's great when, like, one of the best feelings is when I teach a student and they're like, oh, I finally get it. And I'm like, exactly. Cause you can do it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I think everybody can do it. I mean, they wouldn't call this stuff high school or elementary school if people couldn't do it. I mean, by definition, people can do it because
absolutely.
Part of the curriculum.
Yeah, people go to school to learn the same way people go to the gym to become stronger. You know, gyms are not for strong people. They're for people who want to be strong, who want to grow to be strong. Same thing with school. School isn't for smart people. It's for people who want to learn and become stronger thinkers, right? So it's that kind of mentality.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting stuff. I mean, I'm almost sorry that you're considering going into politics. You have so much to give in teaching. Maybe I can talk you out of it. You know,
believe me, my parents and my family have been really trying to talk me out of going into politics, because especially after the roller coaster that happened last year, they're like, Mario, please just focus on teaching and stuff, right? And I feel them, but I love teaching, but like I also have a passion for, trying to get into the world of politics, because the way I see it is that, I could choose to be someone who tries to scoop, like, let's say you're in a boat, right? And there's a hole in the boat and there's water seeping through into the boat, right? I can get a pail and scoop the water out, right? Or I can try and patch the hole, right? So I feel that me getting into politics, me trying to look into seeing how I can make our system better is akin to patching the hole in the boat, right? Rather than trying to deal with the symptoms of the water coming through, right? So that's why I felt motivated to go into politics, So that way I can kind of fix the system itself, just like how I kind of would like to help improve the education system as a whole. So that way all students benefit, you know, not just the ones that are in front of me, but everyone within the system, right?
Oh, it's a very interesting analogy. All right. So your initial foray, or maybe or at least your most recent foray, was with the People's Party of Canada. Now, how did you find yourself as a candidate for the People's Party in the last federal election?
So it was definitely an uphill climb. I did get a lot of help and mentorship from people that were involved, you know, like other fellow candidates, my EDA, Electoral District Association. You know, I met Maxime Bernier, great guy, met Randy Hillier. You know, we all got along. I think I felt a really good sense of community. I found a lot of constituents who are really gung-ho about the values that I held. And the thing is, like, throughout my life, like, my values that I've held, my political viewpoints and stuff were not always popular, especially like in university, even high school and stuff like that, right? And I felt like I've always had to like bottle up my feelings, bottle up my perspective, try to like get people to like me and stuff, right? But then it got to a point where I'm like, you know what? I'm done with that. I'd rather just be who I am, and I'd rather people love me for who I am and hate me for who I am too, rather than loving me for who I'm not, right? So I just decided to stand for my convictions and try to go through with my beliefs and trying to help make our community better. And, you know, like I'd rather that I have the opportunity to show people who I am, so that way everyone knows everything about me, rather than me trying to, like, you know, just be a person that just follows the cog in the machine, right?
Okay, you want to find a party, whatever, that aligns with your beliefs. Let's start with your general beliefs, all right, before we attach them to a party. Like, what is your worldview?
So my worldview has grown over time. I used to be more rigid before, but now I'm more open to conversations with people, whether they're on the left or the right of the political spectrum. But I'm largely libertarian. I identify very much as a libertarian, a moderate right-wing libertarian. I believe that, you know, social cohesion is very important, but also is freedom and liberty. You know, like, let's say, for example, like before I opened myself up with my innermost feelings, you know, I was in favor of commonly like leftist things like open borders and big government and, you know, basically, you know, the things of that nature. But then it got to a point where, like, you know what, now I understand why there is borders. It's to protect the community and also to keep a sense of social cohesion, right? Now, commonly people would accuse me of, like, let's say, xenophobia, because I'm saying, oh, you know what, I want to, like, when I ran for the federal, I was saying, let's lower immigration. And some people would be like, oh, you're being anti-immigration. I'm like, no, I'm not being anti-immigration. I'm completely fine. Like, my grandparents are literally immigrants, right? But we need to have like a sense of social cohesion and also a sense of economic stability, right? So that's why I was saying, like, and this ties very closely with the PPC's values, in that we should lower immigration levels so that way it's economically sustainable, but also so that way we have a vetting process to ensure that the people that are immigrating here have cohesive values, right? Regardless of their ethnicity, regardless of which country they come from, right? The beauty of this country is that we're a multi-ethnic country, but we're also cohesive, and that's the goal, right? But my worry and my concern is that you have pockets of communities, like, let's say Woodbridge, for example. Woodbridge is very much a pocket of Italian Canadians, right? Brampton is largely a pocket of Indian Canadians, right? Markham is largely, Chinese Canadians and stuff, right? But I would rather we all identify as Canadians, as unified people, right? It doesn't matter the ethnicity. What matters is our values, right? So, and that's what we need to keep intact in our country. If you look at Europe, for example, in France, like, things are getting quite unstable because I believe that their vetting process wasn't as, you know, as cohesive as ours, but at the same time, ours isn't perfect either, because you still have these separate pockets of communities. You know, like, even, let's say, for example, the conflict between Israel and Palestine, which is very unfortunate. It's a very complicated history behind that. But when I see conflict between people on that, it makes me sad, because I'm like, yes, it's an awful thing that's happening over there in the other part of the world. But at the same time, let's all try to unite as Canadians and try to, you know, make peace with each other, because in the end, we're all human beings and we all want to have the same values of respect, love, forgiveness, you know, and I think that's extremely important. And that's only one thing that.
To put it another way, are you saying that what unites Canadians as a people is far greater than what divides them?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. Tell me about your experience as a candidate in the fall. You didn't win.
No.
In the sense of being elected, but I suspect that you won in a lot of other ways in terms of experience and all that. So maybe let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, how did you benefit by, you know, what were the wins, the takeaways that you got from running in the fall?
Absolutely. So the biggest win is the fact that with the help of my volunteers and constituents and my friends and family, and the way the momentum was going in the election, together we managed to triple the vote that we had from last year. Last election, the prior election before 2021. So in 2019, People's Party in Woodbridge, we attained about like less than 900 votes. But last year in 2021, we tripled that vote to 2,567 votes. So that was a huge victory in my eyes regarding that we tripled the vote. And on top of that, I noticed that I gained a little bit more than the average for PPC. So the average amount of votes for PPC was 4.9%. I ended up managing 5.4. So slightly higher than the average. So I thought that was a success as well. The fact that I was able to work with constituents, volunteers, and donors and stuff, like we all worked together and I met a lot of people, which was very wholesome. We all shared the same values and we all worked together on that. And I also came very close to the NDP. The NDP just beat me by maybe 900 votes. So I was quite close to overtaking the NDP. My goal was to come in at least third place, but hey, you know what? I fell short by it by a bit.
That's very, very respectable. You know, it takes a long time for these parties to gain traction. So Let me ask you this. You may not have thought about this consciously, but I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
What did you learn about yourself personally, having gone through that experience? If you were to describe yourself, understand yourself, what would have been the difference between before the fall election started and you were a candidate and election day thereafter?
Honestly, it's hard to put into words. There was just a lot that happened. I feel like every aspect of your life as you go through life, like you grow in maturity, and sometimes it's hard to put into words that growth. But I feel like one thing that, you know, I could say, and actually was pointed out by a friend of mine, is that people said to me that they've noticed that I've become more assertive as a person. Before, I used to be very agreeable. I used to kind of like yearn for people's acceptance and stuff like that, right? But over time, I started to grow more and more into being a distinct individual. And I've learned to accept that not everyone's going to like me. It is what it is, right? And some people are going to think I'm, you know, the worst person on this planet, unfortunately. But at the same time, I can't dwell on that because they don't know who I am. I know who I am. You know,
I think it's only possible for people to truly like you if there are people who truly don't.
Yeah, it's true. Exactly. You know, it's about authenticity in the end of the day.
All right. That's interesting. Okay. So let's now move into the spring of 2002. So, as we know, I came across your name because you were actually listed as an independent candidate on the Ontario Elections website and had reached out to you.
Yep.
In that capacity to learn that you actually intend and anticipate running under the banner of the new PPO, Populist Party of Ontario.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Populist Party Ontario, it's very much with the same values, it's like basically the PPC in the form of a provincial party, right? So same values, a lot of the people in the party are people that were in the PPC like myself. So, same color coordination, everything, purple wave. And the only thing is that we were hoping for it to be called the People's Party of Ontario, but unfortunately, there's another party that exists called the People's Political Party of Ontario that was already registered back in 2011. So this was like a decade ago. So
Are they still around? I've never heard of it. Are they still around?
Yeah, they're still around. Yeah, I think it's I think it was made by Kevin Clark. He started the People's Political Party. So we tried to register.
I remember Kevin Clark. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was called, it's called the People's Political. I thought he just called it the People's Party, but okay. That's interesting. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's so, basically the provincial incarnation of the federal People's Party of Canada.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's Mondays, and I think Thursday is the deadline. So I gather you're anticipating that the paperwork will be done, and the party will be registered, and you will magically be rebranded on the Elections Ontario site as a PPO candidate. So that's what you're anticipating. Okay. So we've only got, you know, we've only got like a month or so before the election, and you know, I think there's a huge difference between the federal and the provincial elections, the level of interest, all kinds of stuff. I mean, do you agree with that? Or how do you see this as different from what you did in the fall? Or do you actually see it as just a rerun?
No, actually, it is quite different. I found that, like, for example, last year with the PPC, I received like an overwhelming amount of support and like interest of people requesting lawn signs, looking to volunteer, looking to donate and stuff, right? It was like a constant like run. And now I understand why it's called a run, because you're literally like, you feel like you're always running, right? Physically, it feels like, you know, but for provincial, because the party is very new and we're not officially registered to my knowledge as of right now, but we will be, I feel like we're kind of having like a sleeper start, like basically we're up and coming quite soon and people are going to start to recognize us quite soon. So I find that, excuse me, the beginning of the election is quite quiet in contrast to last year as of right now. I know that like the establishment parties are going hard at this. You have the Liberal Party, Conservative, NDP, the Green Party. You also have the New Blue Party and the Ontario Party, among other parties that are looking to run, Libertarian Party as well. But PPO, we're looking to start fresh, a little bit late into the election, but we're going to start though. But as of right now, it's a little bit quiet. But at the same time, I'm looking to flip that and become a larger voice in the matter, especially once things start rolling with the registration of my party.
Mm. Well, it's pretty clear, given some of the newer parties around the New Blue Ontario, and there's another one I started, a consensus party, or, you know, there's a number of these things that are cropping up, and it seems to me that it's, I think that's good. Mm-hmm. As a general principle, but it seems to me that a lot of this is a reaction to, you know, the last couple of years of all the, you know, the COVID lockdowns and this, that, and the other thing. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, very much so. I know that, like the thing is with the PPC, like the PPC branched off from the Conservative Party, the federally, because of the Maxime Bernier, what he called that the Conservative Party is too corrupt to reform, and that there's too much lobbyists and special interest groups that are steering the narrative and doing things that are not really in the best interests of the people, which is why he made literally the People's Party. And we have more of a libertarian approach with that. And when COVID came around, it's like, it was just a shoo-in for us to just be against that. Same thing with the PPO, right? I know the New Blue, I think, branched off from the provincial Conservative Party for similar reasons. I don't know if this was
that appears to be the case from what I've seen, but I haven't seen a lot.
Right. But I think it was also due to other matters too. But either way, PPO is essentially just running on the same coattails as the PPC. And we're still, you know, against like the whole lockdowns and passports and stuff. Like, just like the PPC, the PPO is not anti-vaccination. Like, that's a common like criticism of from the opposition about us, that, oh, you know, they're anti-vax. We're not. We are not anti-vaccination. We are very pro-vaccination choice. We're pro-vaccination choice, right? And we are pro-informed consent. You know, like
you're against forced vaccination.
Absolutely. You know, people shouldn't be losing their jobs and their livelihood over a personal bodily autonomy choice. you know, like what goes into your body. Like, then it's a very personal choice. I understand you want to, like, people want to protect others. Like, we need to protect the vulnerable. We need to have like that sense of community, 100%, right? But we need to do so responsibly. And there's people who have skepticism of the vaccine, especially as it was introduced quite quickly. I know that mRNA technology has been around for the past decade, but it's still a, you know, a very new virus, very new inoculation. There's people that believe that it's not a vaccine, it's just an inoculation because it doesn't make you immune to the virus, and among other things. So it's largely a choice. And those who are vulnerable, we can protect them in many different ways without having to resort to government authority, right? Like,
well, your point is simply this, that regardless of what's happening with the vaccines, good, bad, or ugly, that people shouldn't be forced to get vaccines or 100%. Be punished because they don't. That's your basic point, I guess.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, like that, you know, me wanting there to be free choice with the vaccine doesn't necessarily mean that we're in favor of putting the vulnerable at risk. No, absolutely not. But I'm just saying that there should be conversations on how to help the vulnerable without having to resort to government authoritarianism.
Well, my impression, I believe I'm correct in saying there's at least one MPP who basically had to sit as an independent because she was not able to provide proof of having been vaccinated. Is that your understanding as well?
I don't recall. I did hear conversations about Parliament or Queen's Park making it mandatory for all parliamentarians to be vaccinated, but I don't think that ended up occurring, because I know, like, in federally, like the Conservative Party, there were some members that weren't vaccinated, even though the Conservative Party was strongly urging for people to get vaccinated. But I think same sort of thing for provincial. But I'm not sure. I do know that for the federal Conservative Party, there was someone in Yukon, forgot his name, that was against the vaccine lockdowns and vaccine passports. And he got kicked out of the Conservative Party. And I believe that's also happened provincially with the Ontario PC Progressive Conservative Party as well. I know Doug Ford, he kicked out a number of candidates for different reasons. One of them was Randy Hillier. But that's
part of it. Isn't this a problem with the, you know, the political parties in general, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, over the years, I've been a strong supporter of independent candidates precisely because, you know, the, you know, extremely coercive relationship between the party leadership and the individual MPPs, et cetera. But, you know, when I look at the site, and I didn't spend a lot of time looking at this today, but, you know, basically it would appear that People's Party of Ontario, the Populist Party of Ontario, is primarily promoting maximum personal freedom for Ontarians, right?
Yeah, maximum personal freedom, but also to improve our system, like improve our healthcare, improve our education in ways that benefit people, but also not to the detriment of the taxpayer, right? And also not to the detriment of students, not to the detriment of healthcare patients, right? Like basically efficiency. We want to have efficiency and effectiveness at the same time, right?
So, and accountability.
Yeah, yes, and accountability, 100%. You know, we want to make sure that the money is being put toward means to help people, right?
Yeah, let me ask something like this. You know, like, I read this stuff on your site and I listen to you talk and I think, what is there not to like about this? Okay. You know, but yet, you know, it seems to me that a critical mass, whether it's a majority or minority, but it's clearly a critical mass of people, right, who are interested in politics, candidates, parties, seem to oppose this stuff. Yeah. I mean, do you agree with me?
Yeah, the basically the large mainstream parties are all against, I guess, the...
How can they oppose these basic values? Can you walk me through this? I mean, it seems like it's opposing motherhood and apple pie.
Yeah, like the way I see it, with the way the Overton window is moving more toward the political left.
Oh my God, you're the second person I've talked to in the last 2 days who's used the words Overton window. But yeah. I also know that I don't hear that phrase very often. So maybe it's a good moment to explain what you mean by that.
Yeah. So Overton window is basically, I guess you could say, the paradigm, the environment in which all people are involved in the political, like the entire political environment is moving, let's say, for example. So the entire political environment is moving more to the left, where basically the center point of the political pendulum, like think of it this way. Think of, like, you have a grandfather clock that's in the middle of the room, okay? Grandfather clock moves to the right, moves to the left, right? Let's say now you physically move the entire grandfather clock toward the left, right? Now the center point on that grandfather clock relative to where it used to be is now more on the left. So if you, let's say the center point of the political environment was
you're saying, I think, that the new normal is more to the left than what the old normal.
Yeah, basically. Right? Yeah. Being a centrist now is different than being a centrist like 20 years ago.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So like for example, Elon Musk, I don't know if anyone's seen his tweet recently, but essentially he identified as being slightly center left for the longest time. But because the Overton window shifted, now he's considered right wing. And he's like, this is crazy. You know what I mean? So.
Well, I think, you know, it is very interesting. I mean, I do think that. I think that's right. I don't know why that is. I think that perhaps as you get more discrepancies in wealth and that sort of stuff, I think you're probably more likely to get that sort of thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so, I mean, I would have to think that you and your party, I suppose, in a very real sense, would see yourselves as sort of the guardians of a reasonable center then, right?
I would agree with that, because you know what, like, we are very pro freedom of speech and we're open to conversations with whomever, like for example, I know that the abortion debate has kind of sprung up because of what happened in the US, right? But my party, for example, we're very open to the conversation on that. The other mainstream parties are not open to that conversation. And in contrast, I know parties like the New Blue Party and Ontario Party are very staunchly like pro-life, right? But my party, we're more pro-conversation. We're more pro-conversation around that, because like the candidates in my party have differing views on that. And we want to hear all sides with that, right? Like personally, myself, I'm pro-life, right? But I'm also open to hearing what the other side has to say, because in the end, we want to help people, right? There's a lot of nuance to that conversation.
Well, isn't there a difference between being pro-life and being pro-personal choice?
Yeah. Well, with regards to the abortion debate. Yeah.
Well, in any case, I think the Supreme Court of Canada settled that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A long time ago, at least in Canada. But okay.
Right. Right. But I know it's a very touchy subject, but it's something I'm very open to conversing with people on and sharing my views, and hopefully we can find a way to help both women and children, including the unborn. So
yeah, well, you know, that's always going to be an extremely volatile topic.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I understand people have different viewpoints. And
absolutely. I mean, I think
I respect them.
Question, you know, how does a functioning democracy accommodate different viewpoints? Right. I mean, would you agree that, I'm just making this up as I'm thinking through, by the way, okay, but do you think that part of what it means to be a functioning democracy is to be able to build in the consideration of a number of points of view?
100%. I mean, that's why we have...
You think that's what's going on in the current state of politics in Canada?
Yes and no. I mean, thankfully, like people like myself, like my party, were able to run in this election, and we're able to, you know, get votes and promote ourselves. And, you know, last year when I ran for PPC, the election was managed by Elections Canada. And I have to say, I got to give it a hand to them. Like, they were very fair. They did everything they could to help me get confirmed as a candidate and stuff like that. There wasn't any biases that I found. you know, very, very fair. So we definitely have that intact in our country, as far as I see. Like, I literally went to the poll stations. I know people were concerned about voter fraud, you know, especially with the controversy that happened in the US back in 2020. But I was there in the polling station, like when the votes were being counted. I saw no corruption. I saw everything was fair. The people that were working there were fair. So I'm happy about that. So that's definitely a plus for our country, at least from what I've seen. I'm not sure if that's the case with other polling stations, but the one I was at was very fair. But with regards to the mainstream parties and the power that they have, no, it's like, it's basically, you have, in my opinion, like the hand in each other's pockets. Like you have minimal differences between the mainstream conservative, liberal, and NDP parties, but there is a commonality between all of them, right? Like they're all in favor of like the lockdowns, the mandates. They're all in favor of, like they all have lobbyists and special interest groups, and there is corruption in all those parties. Like in a way, they're all very similar. It's like you have the mainstream versus the non-mainstream, right? The non-mainstream would be like PPO, Ontario Party, New Blue, independent candidates. You know what I'm saying? So,
and independent candidates have a terribly difficult time. I mean, at least with small parties, who are a party, and they're sort of you know, a coalition of like-minded people, but independents, you know, can usually are very, very isolated in the whole thing. May I ask you this? You know, I've always been, you know, I started something years ago called Toronto. I live in Toronto, Danforth, Toronto, Danforth debates to ensure, you know, to make sure that small party and independent candidates got invited to debates, which they weren't. I'm wondering what your experience of that was in the fall and is today. Are there debates where you're running, and are you invited, or what's happening on that front?
So unfortunately, there was no debate last year in last year's election in my riding.
You're kidding me. Not a single one.
Nope. And not even in 2019.
The last time there was, you should have organized it yourself.
Yeah, you're right. I could have, but I mean, with it being my first election, it was quite a roller coaster ride, to say the least. But yeah, there was no debate.
Not a single debate
in Vaughan Woodbridge for 2021 nor 2019. Last time there was a debate, I think, was like 2015. So.
And what about for this provincial election? Are you aware of anything?
I haven't heard a thing about any potential debates. If there is one, I'll be happy to participate in it. But I haven't heard any debates so far.
Well, that really is an amazing thing. I mean, it's as though the political parties are, you know, not only have sucked up all the oxygen, you know, as far as who can run, but now they're not even, you know, letting the voters, you know, see these candidates comparatively. That's amazing. So what are you going to do for the next month? Is this sort of a 9 to 5, a 9 to 9? What do you do? I mean, do you knock on doors? How do you market? How does one market oneself?
So I can talk based on my experiences from last year. So essentially setting up a website, having an entry on my party's website, an entry about myself and how I could be contacted. I've had people reach out to me and support me, you know, setting up my website to allow donations and stuff like that. So getting donations there, that's first and foremost, because without donations, I'm not able to purchase any signs or campaign literature and stuff like that. So I was basically starting from the ground up, you know, and essentially, you know, basically managing volunteers to help me out and putting up the signs and sending out the flyers, going door to door, knocking, saying, this is who I am, this is my flyer, you know, take a look at it, and what I would normally do. In fact, you know what? I literally have one right here. Might as well use this as an example. So this was my flyer last year, okay, for PPC. And on the back,
your hair was shorter.
Sorry?
Your hair was shorter.
Yeah, my hair was shorter. Yeah, it was shorter. But yeah, so like it has my face. This is Elect Mario Greco, when the election day is, my party name. And then on the back, it has five topics that were very prominent talking points for my party and myself. And then the sixth entry would be learn more, take a picture of the QR code to be sent to the website. This isn't a QR code for personal identity. It's a QR code for a website. So people could take a picture of it, brings them straight to my website, and then they'd be able to, you know, contact me, donate to me and stuff like that. Right. So that's essentially what kind of happened. So, you know, responding to emails, finding someone to produce my signs, finding someone to produce my flyers, picking them up, giving them the volunteers to them, for them to distribute it. Like I would distribute a whole bunch of these flyers to some of my volunteers, and they'd go in their own subdivision to handle my flyers and stuff, right? So basically trying to manage the whole thing and spread it out and have my volunteers, deliver the flyers, and I was putting in signs and stuff like that. It was quite a rush, and responding to emails and checking my social media, checking my Facebook, checking my Twitter, checking my Instagram, checking my emails to respond to everyone. Then I also had to respond to like media inquiries, and including one that outright slandered me and lied about me, which was a very, very awful experience that I've gone through with that. And
you'll have to get over that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That is,
they the lied rule
rather than the exception in this particular, if you're not thick skinned, you don't want to be involved in this stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. Tell me, was it hard to get volunteers in that, or?
Last year, no, the volunteers came to me. Like it was like super, like it was actually overwhelming. I was like trying to keep up with the amount of people that were wanting to help me out. So, but I, took care of it. And I had some of my friends that really like helped me out in making calls. I had a campaign manager who made a whole bunch of calls to people asking, if they're open to volunteering and stuff, right? People on the membership list. Also had another friend of mine who came all the way from up north, like Wasaga Beach area, to help me put up signs and stuff. Another friend of mine to help me do the same thing. Another person, I had so many people coming in to help me out, right? And now for this election, because like we're kind of making a quiet entrance, I don't have as much fanfare right now, but I do have my friends and family that are supporting me. Even though like my family and friends, they're worried for me after, especially like what happened last year, and especially after what happened, a few weeks ago, when I got attacked at the subway station, they're very worried for me, but at the same time, they know that this is something I feel passionate for, to help the community, and they respect that. So I have a lot of respect. I have a lot of support from them, which I'm very humbled by. But with regards to the constituents at large, I think right now my goal is to reach out to them, call them, ask some of my friends to help me to volunteer and call my constituents, because there's 300-ish of them to make calls for, to see if they're interested in volunteering. So that's going to be my path going forward.
Wow. Okay. Well, this has been great catching up with you today. As we sort of bring this to a close, maybe you could sort of conclude with how people can get in touch with you, and any sort of final, what would be the thing that you would want them to most remember about you?
Yeah. So if anyone is open to reaching me, definitely check out MarioGreco.ca. It'll bring you to my Linktree page that allows you to, learn more about me, see my social media, which is at the bottom of the page. If you're open to being a volunteer or requesting a lawn sign or donating, it's all there on that website, so you can check it out. And basically, I will stand for your freedoms, for your safety as well. I'm going to be looking after, trying to promote, helping those who are suffering from mental illness, because I was literally attacked by someone who was suffering from mental illness. So, and I feel bad for him. I hope that he recovers, that way he has a happier life and everyone else around him are safer, right? That's where we can have safer communities, including a safer TTC subway. I want there to be cohesiveness. That's what I'm looking to stand for: cohesiveness, freedom, and healing above all. Healing. We especially need healing in the education, healthcare, and business fields, especially after the ramifications of COVID and its response.
Okay, well, that's great. Thank you very much. And I've been chatting with Mario Greco this afternoon, who is running in the Von Woodbridge riding. So thanks very much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. All the best.